Welcome, everybody, to the Adventure Slang Podcast, the podcast where we speak adventure. Howdy, Aaron. How are you today?
Hello. I'm doing pretty well. Just been a nice, another busy month, I want to say, but slightly different. Our Kickstarter launched on March 16th, and it's been moving along.
Yeah, we are, it's our first launch and our first major project, and we are learning a lot. That goes with saying, which is a good thing. Being a content creator and running business and things like that is a whole bunch of work for those who haven't done it. And I'm sure people can imagine, but when you're actually doing it, man, it's sort of nonstop.
Yeah, it does kind of feel that way, sort of in a few different ways, I think, because there's like a social aspect where you're just kind of keeping up with the flow of the conversations, of the dynamic in the communities and stuff like that. There's the game itself, which I feel like we've refined pretty well, but it does still continue to evolve and take its own shape as we work on it. And then there's just little things that come up along the way that also demand attention. And it's just, it's a nice stream of work.
It is. And it's mostly fun. Even on the tired days. But speaking of fun, we have had a busy March. In addition to that, we had a nice, well-produced, thanks to Todd Moonbounce, produced and hosted back-to-back two-shot for us just before the Kickstarter launched. And then we also had a fun opportunity to interview with a few folks, Dan Davenport and Mildra, most recently, as well as a one-shot with the fellows over at Fresh Out the Box.
Yes, and all of those were very fun. It's fun to play our game, honestly. I have fun playing our game is what I mean by that. And just kind of the state that we've brought it up to. And it's also fun to, be on streams and get more engaged with what's going on.
Yeah, just being part of the community, which, everyone, we invite everyone to do that. You know, it's great when you get involved in the online community, you start to meet more and more people and make friends and all the things that really what role-playing games are about.
What's fun about
playing our game, I think, and playtesting it and doing the one-shots and stuff like that is that we get to see people who have not been part of the building process see what's there, and then we get to see how they interact with it. And that tells us a whole lot about where the design has come, where it's at, and sometimes where we need to take it. But pleased to see that for the most part, I think people really identify with it, engage with it nicely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so as well. I mean, we do still have work to do in it, to refine the things. That's just how playtesting goes. But we are hearing some feedback that aligns with what our intention is with the system. And that is really awesome to experience.
Yeah. I kind of feel like game design is and world building is the same as the fiction writing process or any sort of art kind of creation where you could always work on it. Always work on it. Obviously, if that wasn't possible, then there wouldn't be individual IPs with several editions over the years,
Yeah, that's a good point. Definitely. And there's a lot of room within that process to be creative and to take a concept that we might have seen 100 times and then totally just twist it or readapt it to a new context. Mm-hmm. So it's a good process.
Yeah, well, I think that's how things grow and evolve. And they just change by virtue of taking things that were not prior, previously maybe established, and then making them canon.
Right. Yeah.
So we mentioned Fresh Out the Box. We got to play with Gary and Jahan over there, and they do such a great thing for the community by bringing in all kinds of games, introducing them to an audience, playing through them, sharing systems, sharing their feedback and their perspectives on it. And they especially do nice things for the indie game designers who are not as well known as the big companies, and sharing mm-hmm. what all, you know, everyone is doing in those arenas. And then maybe introducing things to an audience that may not have heard of it before. Similar to what we've got going on with New of Arden and other, you know, systems out there. So it was fun for us because we then were able to bring them on here mm-hmm. and have conversation with them about where they came from and their whole experience in games, in both, well, they'll talk about it soon, but both tabletop board games and RPGs.
Right. Yes, it really is. Like we said before, it's a lot of fun to do those kinds of things, but it really is a beneficial service to the community and to smaller companies like ourselves to get that kind of exposure and be able to have the opportunity to talk about what we've been doing and what we've created.
Yeah. So let's hear from Gary and Jahan. It was a lot of fun talking to them, and I learned a whole bunch about playing. It's such a funny word when we talk about playing in this, because we are just playing games, but at the same time, there's something really concrete about it and what it does. And I think we touch on that. So maybe we talk to Gary and Jahan, see what they have to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Jahan and Gary, thanks for joining us today on Adventure Slang Pod. Glad to have you here.
Hey, Ty, thanks for having us.
I'm so glad to be here.
Wonderful. Why don't you go ahead and maybe just introduce yourselves real quick and tell us where you're coming over from.
Sure. I'm Jahan, also known as Jahananon from Fresh Out the Box. I am the board game guru and game master extraordinaire, as they call me. That's me.
It's me, Casualty CDG, but you can call me Gary. I'm a retired child crimes and human trafficking detective turned tabletop titan and improv comedian. I'm the other half of Fresh Out the Box.
Comedian. I have not asked you about that improv comedian stuff. Do you like stand-up?
So I actually, at a young age, maybe in like fifth grade, I started doing like comedy in theater after school, and I hated musicals and I had a really hard time remembering lines for plays, but I liked being on stage and I liked having fun. And that's about the time Whose Line Is It Anyways came out. And then about that time, there was a pilot program at my school called Comedy Sports. And it's sort of in a lot of the major cities across the U.S. It's like it's kind of a Who's Line knockoff thing. And so I've really been into improv comedy my whole life. And then I started doing local films and stuff in Houston. And then I hit the brakes, made a U-turn, and was like, let's get a career. Became a police officer, became a detective, and did all that. That was fun for about a decade. But now, back to comedy on the internet.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to find out where we can find you. When you say you're doing comedy on the internet, I assume then we can find the evidence.
Is that correct? He does a lot of it on our show because he's okay. A funny guy.
That's fair.
That's right. I said you could find me every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at twitch.tv/Jahananon. Everything we do is more or less just long-form improv comedy adventure. Jahan has kind of started to realize over the years that the improv approach is oftentimes, it's okay as a game master and as a player. Yes. And these long form improvs are a lot of fun for us. It's some kind of release and some kind of performance versus having some scripted adventures, just not quite as fun. It doesn't really scratch that same itch. Mm-hmm. And then also we have a podcast where on the podcast, our third partner on the podcast, Drew Munhausen, he's a movie guy. He went to college for digital broadcast journalism. He's very by the book. He's got paragraphs of written text. He's got stories and things that he says in order. And it is my sole duty to throw him off what he's trying to say.
Oh, we love interrupting.
Just to find something off the cuff. So, I like to think that improv is almost a way of life for me.
That is amazing. Good. That is good behind the scenes information, because when we're watching or listening, we know now that there's more going on there that we can watch for. I was not aware of that. That's really good to know. Before we get too much further into Fresh Out the Box, I do want to touch on something, Jahan, that you say, a board game guru. Yeah. And I want to know what you mean by that. Like, that sounds like a pretty cool title. What makes you the board game guru?
I play a lot of board games. I have over 100 sitting downstairs. I'm a hobbyist, so I play a lot of stuff. I play the crunchy ones. I play the like 6 hour long board games. I've slogged through Kingdom Death Monster, which is, if you don't know, it's like a $500 board game that you could play for like a week straight and still not beat it. I like the punishing games. I also like the quick fun stuff. I think that board games are for everyone. And I'm also always the person that has to explain the rules. And anyone who plays board games knows that there's always a rules guy. And it winds up being me.
It's the owner. It's usually the owner. Whoever has the most games sort of naturally gravitates to the rule book and then becomes that person.
And that's Jahan. He has so many. And actually, our going away party for my wife and I before we left Texas was at a place called Battle Hops in Katy, Texas. That's a brewery / board game place. And so we all met up there, had a bunch of friends come up, and we had Jahan basically was our, host and our tour guide. Like, hey, Jahan, there's 7 of us. What are we going to play? What's going to be fun for everybody? And so, we would just send Jahan off into the library of games and know that he would come back with a winner. And he did every time for like 4 hours.
Oh, man, that's phenomenal.
That's awesome.
That was pretty fun. It was a nice challenge because the player count kept changing and the level of player, we started off with some pretty, solid gamers. And then we got some more casual people coming in. So accommodating everybody and making sure everyone had a good time was a lot of fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We had another board gamer on here, and Aaron is a board gamer. I make that stipulation as if I'm not, but it's not true. I like games, but there is a board gamer, right? Just like there are role play.
Yeah. Gamers. I mean, the way that I differentiate is like, I'm a hobbyist. I spend way too much money and I play the gross games that you shouldn't play because they're punishing. and that's fine. It's fine if you're not that. You're still a board gamer. You know what I mean?
And I think I probably side more with you, Ty, where I'm not a hobbyist and I don't spend that much money. I don't have 100 board games. I have like 6. I like them very much. But I don't buy a new board game maybe once every 3 years or so, once every 2 years. And for Jahan, I think he probably was buying... There was a while there where you were buying about 3 a month or so.
I believe that board games are like that. They all look like they're worth it,
Yeah. Which you have a favorite, Aaron?
That is a good question. I think recently my favorite has been Rune Wars, not the war game Rune Wars, but the territory control style Rune Wars.
Interesting. I haven't played that one. That sounds fun. Territory Control's good. I do enjoy that. I recently played Scythe for the first time, which is a classic. I think my favorite. So my favorite game is actually a little bit like on the more casual side. Splendor is one of my favorite board games of all time.
Oh, that's fair. Splendor's really well written.
Yeah, I enjoy it a lot. It's very smooth. I'll play any game, anytime, my other favorite game is Nemesis. So I don't know if you've ever played Nemesis, but that's one of those 6 hour games that surprisingly people will put up with for 6 hours. I haven't had an issue with it yet, which surprised me. Usually people like crap out after like hour two.
But, you know that one, Aaron? Do you know Nemesis?
I feel like I've heard of it, but I actually don't know it.
It's essentially... the first Alien movie, more or less. Nice. Kind of mixed with the second one. I don't know. It's definitely an homage to Xenomorphs and that whole situation.
A survival kind of game?
Yeah, it's a survival game. You have hidden objectives. Like, your objective might be to, like, get everyone home safely, but it might also be to make sure a certain player dies. to sabotage the ship. You never know, like, who's exactly on your side. And sometimes, like, it changes mid-game, which is interesting. So
that does sound interesting.
Like One Night a Werewolf or whatever that
is called. Yeah. I enjoy it a lot. It's a lot of work, but it's fun.
So tell us both of you, if you would, how you got into tabletop role-playing games, but this, you know, this gaming culture. Maybe we'll go tabletop role-playing games, because that has generally sort of a specific slant to it that's kind of varies from person to person.
I know on the chronological timeline, Jahan actually got into tabletop games before I did. So Jahan, why don't you kick it off?
You want me to kick it off? All right. I was going to say, I know your story and it's a good one. So I was going to let you go, but I'll go. Yeah. So, I mean, I've always been a gamer. I taught myself how to play Magic the Gathering when I was like 8, by playing with myself. Damn it. Not yes. Playing with myself, playing by myself with the starter set until I figured out how it worked. And then, you know, I eventually evolved to, I believe, yeah, my mom got me because she, you know, she pays attention to things I like. I was really into like Lord of the Rings animated movies and that kind of stuff, and the old Dungeons and Dragons TV show. So I guess she picked up on that. And she got me the 3rd edition box set. For Christmas, and that Christmas, like, we used to like have a lot of family going up, and like we'd all gather. When we were at the gathering, I begged my older brother to like be like, you just have to read the rules and we play. And you know, he ran our first adventure, which I remember to this day. I played the wizard because of course I did, because that's what I do. And we had to save the unicorn from the goblins, because that's what you do in a box set. And I was hooked, immediately hooked. I became a forever DM, got all the books, and then started teaching all my friends how to play. And that was it. That was sunk.
And how old were you again?
I was 12.
Okay.
Maybe 11.
And nice.
My family was quite the opposite.
Yes.
I was gifted D&D on like January 20 something for a Christmas present by a buddy of mine. It was on a clearance bin, the starter set for Dungeons and Dragons 4th edition. And he brought it over and was like, hey, I saw this on clearance. I thought we could just give it a shot. You know, this is just Dungeons and Dragons. And we were like, yeah, let's see what happens. So we go sit down at the table and my mom comes in the room and excuse me for my colorful language. She's like, what are you doing playing that fucking nerd game in my living room? And we all just stopped and looked and we were like, I'm sorry. And then she walked out, like stormed out angrily. And I was like, what just happened here? So we played for another, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours late in deep into the night. And when we stopped, we were like, so you want to like play this game as a joke again next week? And then maybe the week after that and keep playing this game as a joke and see what happens? And so we didn't know, and we didn't, you know, intend on becoming tabletop role-playing game guys. But after that, for the next couple of years, it like took over my life where, you know, different members of the party would have jobs, and we would have to set our alarms to wake up at like 3:15 in the morning so that we could play with the guy who got off at 2 and the guy who had to go to work at 6. And we would all run up to the card shop and play for 3 hours real quick and then go back home and go to sleep.
That's
yes. So I went from 0 to 10 on tabletop role playing games.
And how old were you when you started?
I think I was 18 years old. I must have been a senior in high school that was that January, I think. And I was Dungeons and Dragons 4th edition, which I know now was kind of like a video gamey, card gamey approach. But at the time, like I said, I come from this improv background. So to me, it was still a tabletop role playing game. And I played my role like, you know, all the time, as much as I could. I played my character. So it never was a gamey experience to me until I stopped playing it. And I was like, oh, now I see what people have to say about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when it 4th edition came out, a lot of people complained, you know, that it wasn't like hardcore and that like it was getting this mass appeal and people wanted people out of the hobby. But I always thought it was cool. And like, you're just proof that it brought people into the hobby, which I, you know, is obviously great.
And what's really cool, Jahan and I, I'll connect our adventures for you. We had a mutual friend named Kayvon, and Kayvon went to my school, but had known Jahan since they were both infants. The Kayvon's 1 year older, and they grew up as babies in another state.
As one does.
Both families moved here, and they grew up, you know, all the way through grade school, all the way through high school, their whole lives. And so I knew Kayvon from theater. He was a tech guy, and I was an actor. And I had met Jahan a couple times at social events, but we never really hit it off. We never really clicked. And then Kayvon left a pair of shoes at my house. And these are the fateful shoes.
Kayvon those left. Ones that formed to your toes and like his smelled like shit.
I think they were the, what are the really terrible ones that came back around in style for no reason whatsoever?
Crocs?
Crocs. They were Crocs. So he left a pair of Crocs at my house. And then he went to Boulder, Colorado for college for like 3 years. And I never threw those Crocs away. I kept them in a closet. I knew where they were. And I had every intention of giving him his Crocs back. So I called him one day. He moved back. I said, I've got your Crocs. He said, hey, I'm playing Dungeons and Dragons right now. I can't really hang out. And I was like, can I play Dungeons and Dragons with you guys? What edition? Fourth. So I was like, yes, please, please, because my dungeon master had just moved to Pasadena. Kayvon was my buddy. I get there, and Jahan's running the game. So I had met this guy before, met him again as an adult, and the fateful pair of shoes reunited us. And so I guess there would be no Fresh Out the Box if it wouldn't have been for Crocs.
Brought to you by Crocs.
Wow. Yeah. Would you call this a Cinderella story?
Well done.
Are those shoes, are they immortalized? Do they still exist?
Oh, you, no idea. I imagine they're in the trash by now.
Sure. Okay, so tell us about Fresh Out the Box then. What is, for our listeners, what is Fresh Out the Box?
So Fresh Out the Box started during lockdown. I lost my job in the beginning of COVID. I was working at a restaurant. One day they sent us all home. We had to get rid of all the food and stuff. We got to take some of it, you know, home and eat it and stuff, which was cool. But eventually my boss called and was like, hey, the restaurant's no longer there. They didn't tell me. So we're all out of work. And so I was unemployed during lockdown, as many were. And Gary, me and him had reconnected recently and started like playing video games again, blah, blah, blah. And we started streaming video games. I had already been streaming video games for a little bit. I had like 30 followers. But then we just started streaming some stuff together. And then eventually, you know, we both like TTRPGs. I got the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplaying like 4th edition book. And we were just we started reading it on stream and like trying to learn with the audience kind of thing. And that kind of, you know, we this channel was born out of me and Gary wanting to play every TTRPG, that are like mission statement. It's not possible, but we're gonna try, you know. It's, we're still gonna
sometimes
try.
It's really hard to just find the time to read one, to read a whole book. And when you're reading a book by yourself to really understand, you know, what did that just say? Like, what do these two things mean when they get put together? Or what happens if these three things counteract each other? It's really easy to kind of go over that stuff with two people. And when you set aside time during the week to, hey, look, we're both just going to read this book and talk to each other, you start to understand systems better. And everyone has seen Dungeons & Dragons, and everyone's played Dungeons & Dragons. So to Jahan's point, that's exactly it, is we wanted to show off all the other games, every other game. It doesn't matter if it's a big game or a small game or a license or an indie game. We don't care. We want to show off games.
Yeah. Well, and now you've sort of become like the indie demo, or the Kickstart demo folks. I mean, is that fair to say?
I mean, we're trying. We have had quite a few on the stream. We're always looking to get more. We had you yourself on, obviously, recently. And that was a lot of fun. And we love doing it. our platform's not necessarily the biggest, but it's getting there. We're approaching 300 followers on Twitch, and we have a bunch of other followers in other areas. But yeah,
I like to think that we walked this strange fine line because we were really lucky when we first started. Artal Saurian had just released Cyberpunk Red, and they were totally ready and willing to share PDF copies with us. Right. So they were, as a brand new channel, we were able to showcase brand new games. And then Modiphius Entertainment, Chris Birch, the CEO of Modiphius, came on, and he ran an Elder Scrolls Skyrim adventure board game for us. And then
that was crazy.
And then sent us copies of Dune, the tabletop game of the year. So we've worked with some of these giant names, but you're right. We turn around, and anyone who's got a Kickstarter, some of the Kickstarter ideas are better than the big box ideas. And so we want to play things that are new and fresh and beautiful and something that is really, you know, worthy of attention in this world of 1,000 games. You know, we're not going to play every single expansion that comes out for 5th edition. That's not to say that they're not great. They very well may be.
I have a feeling, I have a theory, and I, as an indie game designer myself, this is my hope. There's chatter, you know, out in the socials about people saying, oh, there's more than D&D, there's more than D&D. And that's a very good thing to know. I think what we've got, though, is in this Dungeons & Dragons renaissance that has been going on for roughly the last 5 to 7 years, there's that whole mass of people who came to tabletop role-playing games from Dungeons and Dragons who are at some point in their careers going to want to know what else is out there. And things like Fresh Out the Box give them an opportunity to find some of those things because eventually some people are going to want to know about them.
That's exactly right. And we try to play 3 different systems every week. Most of our game schedules have been 10 episodes or 20 episodes, and then we'll switch the system we're playing. So that's one of the things about tuning into our channel is you're going to see different characters and different stories and different systems. And a lot of the times we will, you know, pause and we'll break down, here's how these rules work in this system. Here's why they work this way. That way you don't just hear us screaming numbers and cheering all day. you'll at least understand why you're cheering.
Yeah. Yeah, in the past... So we've been doing this for, what, like a year and like 3 or 4 months or something?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And in that time, yeah, we've done like 8 campaigns. Some of which, we have a 20-set Warhammer campaign. We have a 26-set Expanse campaign. Then we have like Savage World Deadland, Cyberpunk Red. We've gotten to do a lot of these. We also have a lot of one shots over on our YouTube.
Shout out to the people at Pinnacle Entertainment with Savage Worlds. They gave us everything there. That's Clint and Jody Black, people who run Pinnacle. We loved playing Savage Worlds. We just played a Deadlands campaign and haven't gotten back to explore any of the other settings.
Man, it was a lot of fun.
It's a good system, definitely.
It's a unique system.
I like that system a lot.
It is like it's different. It feels different to play. Mm-hmm. Just I don't know. I remember we had a player die of a terminal illness, which I have never had happen, and it wasn't me doing it. It was the game. The game did it, and I was like, "Wow, you like Gary's brother's character died of like consumption."
So he had picked a background. It's not a perk, but
he picked a flaw, and it was like.
So if you fail a Constitution check under a 5, then you die. But you can use a reroll. But if you roll a 1 on a Constitution check, you cannot use a reroll. And so he rolled a 1 as we were just like trying to stay up overnight and ride horses. And Savage Worlds had a thing called Dead Man Walking, where just because you die doesn't mean you're dead yet, but it's up to you and the game master to kill your character by the end of the session. And so, so we all knew he was dying. and it was this really like emotional thing.
It was hard, man. That one got me.
That was the day he was dying. He was able to say goodbye to some of our characters, and it was, you know, from then on, I kind of know that if a character dies in a campaign, I almost always want to do the dead man walking approach.
Yeah, that's...
It might let you make a better narrative escape for the character than just having them, you know, get stabbed.
What an interesting concept.
It is.
Yeah, I like it a lot. But yeah, I mean, those are just some of the many, many games. And we've met so many cool people doing this, yourselves included. We met all kinds of indie developers, a lot of whom have become friends. I believe we actually all met on Gamer Mom Luna's podcast and like that. Mm-hmm. And we play games with some of the other people from that very same stream. And it's been a whole thing. What a great community. Yeah. I feel like we definitely have to mention Green Ronin and them being so good to us as well. They're a small publishing company and they do, you know, Modern Age, which is a game we're still playing. And they give us anything we ask for pretty much. They're just so great. And they introduced us to a lot of cool people. So we've just been, I don't know. We've been very fortunate in our meetings.
I mean, I do want to give a props to Luna for what she does with her Tavern Talks. I was just on there last night. Last night. And, but our panel where we met Todd Moonbounce and Misha and us, I work with all those people still. I work with all of you, you know, monthly. And that is what's cool about this industry is that it is a lot of people who are sort of doing the grassroots thing in various ways. And it's so creative and there's so many aspects to it that it keeps us all going. But at the same time, you're right. The people are so cool and making those friendships and those connections. We want to be around each other more and continue to do those things, which is what it's all about. It's the social. That's what it's about.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been learning about the tabletop role-playing game, like both the designers and just the community at large. Honestly, like it's pretty small. Like it's pretty, it's this, you know, we all kind of start to know each other and like, you know, we swim around in the same water with some pretty big fish. Like we've already run and played some games with people that like had a hand in designing some of my favorite games ever. And that was, you know, like, because one of my first non-D&D games was Vampire, the Masquerade. And in that world of darkness, there's also Changeling, which is like, you know, the fey creatures. That was one of my favorites in World of Darkness. And we got to work with one of the writers of that. And that was really cool. And it's just been, I don't know, at this point, we set out pretty much a lot of what we've set out to do. And, been very fortunate.
I mean, I would say in less than a year and a half, I would expect Fresh Out the Box to continue to experience that and to grow and things like that. Because like I said, you know, the people that play these games and that follow the industry are going to learn that there's a place to go to experience something that they may or may not have heard about yet and see it in action. And that does so much for everybody. I mean, what you've got going here really is a service to the industry.
Yeah, true.
I would be remiss now to mention Tony Vicinda at Plus One EXP. When we were first getting started, Tony was first getting started, and he also does a whole lot of indie games over on his channel. He's kind of got an indie expo going on. And if you're looking for more indie stuff, go check out Plus One EXP, friend of the show, Tony Vicinda.
I like to call him the champion of indie games. He does not call himself that. I do it for him. but yeah, no, he blew up real big. We started at a very similar time. And he turned it into a whole thing. It's a whole empire now. But he still, you know, he'll still take our messages. He'll still come run games on our channel. All around great guy. Some of his, I've listened to some of his conversations he's had about acceptance and being inclusive in the TTRPG community. It's just great stuff, like solidly great stuff. He's a good dude.
Yeah. And I'd like to talk to him more more too. Maybe we'll have him come here sometime. Ooh. If he'd like to. back to what Fresh Out the Box has experienced. Do you have some favorite games that you have discovered now over the course of your program?
I'll let Gary start that.
So
our opinions differ.
Yeah. So what I am sort of doing in my mind, I guess, is taking all these different scoops from all these different systems and combining them in a stew in my head. Because I think almost every system I've read has something unique or something cool that you can take away. And even if you don't use that mechanic as your main mechanic, it can be a secondary table, it could be a side table, it could power something else that the designers didn't see the intent for. In particular, when we started playing Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, I did not actually care for that game. The character classes are really stuck in their skills, and you can't have other skills unless you multiclass. They make multiclassing really easy to do, to swap from one class to the other. But the problem is, you kind of have to Frankenstein this weird character together based on paths, rather than sort of pick the skills that you want to make your own hero. And there's something really limiting about it that I did not like. In that same aspect, Warhammer had that whole aberration table where dark magic would literally corrupt you and make you spawn a tentacle out of your arm, or become a horrifying monster forever. And it's not something that you got to reverse, and because the chaos magic is terrifying there.
I don't know why Gary would bring up Warhammer. He knows I can't stop. there's so much. So Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay game. I loved it. I will parrot back everything Gary just said, except I enjoyed all of those things about the the characters. I liked the Frankensteining. But he's not wrong. You do, like, because once you transfer classes, you kind of lose access to some of the stuff you had, which is a little weird. I feel like it's close to being perfect, though. I feel like if you swapped a couple things, everyone would be happy. But the corruption, the corruption has lent to some very unique situations that are so hard to do in games with players. Just, it's so hard to do the kinds of theming that allowed. So one of our characters, one of our players, had some corruption. There is a way to get rid of corruption. If you get too much, you have to make a test. Sometimes you can mutate, and if you mutate, odds are people are going to find you and kill you, right? Whole witch hunt scenario. But you can say, hey, Game Master, I would like to get rid of some of this corruption. Okay. And then you kind of give your agency away for like a bit. You kind of like black out. You do the Dark God's bidding, essentially. You do something. The first time it happened, I got a witch hunter killed, and a whole thing happened. A witch went free. It was just a really unique thing. So I will sing the praises of that all the time. I'm a big Warhammer guy.
Besides Warhammer, I've really enjoyed the adventure game engine, which is Green Ronin's house system. I've always wanted to play a sci-fi adventure ever since I played D&D for years and years and years. And I just kind of hit a wall on fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to play sci-fi. And we ended up playing The Expanse, which is, you know, definitely sci-fi, but it's a modern setting, almost a realistic sci-fi.
Yeah.
And it's that game model, the Age engine, the adventure game engine, is so fun. I just had such a great time with it. When you roll doubles and a success, you get access to stunt points based on what your stunt score die is. So usually you would roll two die of one color and a third of another, but with roll 20, it's just an easy click and fill system that separates your die colors for you. So you roll doubles, and then your third die, you get that many stunt points. Stunt points allow you to do things like the game master gives you a new narrative arc based on something that you found in this room. And you know, you could just spend four stunt points, and that's what you do with it. And so now I just look at Jahan, and he's like,
And then I have to improv.
He's like, story.
Based on something in this room.
And the stunt points, they work in combat. They work in ship fights. Yeah. They work in conversations. There are socials, you know, melee, guns. There are all these different kinds of stunt points and combos that are just really, really fun. And then on top of that is the character trees, which I love classes, and I love to see some, you know, different sliding parts for classes to make different trees work out. And in the adventure game engine, you're not really limited to classes at all. You can always spend a point to buy the first level, the novice part of a background or of a class. And so you can always sort of be a little bit of everything. And then doubling up on a class makes you a master, and tripling up makes you basically legendary. So it only takes you 3 focused upgrades to be legendary at one thing, at sword fighting, or legendary at hacking. And so the system is fast, it's easy, it's clean. I'm a big fan of it. I'd still like to play the fantasy age. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Which we will. And they just dropped their Cthulhu Awakens Kickstarter. I backed that. That's a horror age system. So this is, the age system from Green Ronin is probably one of my favorites too. The stunts are amazing. They have a bunch of different stunt. Like, you have to choose from the chart situationally. Like, if you're in a chase, odds are you have to choose from the chase one. But it's such a different experience, and it really does something that's important. So a lot of what I find, because I've been a game master for like 2 decades, is that players don't realize how much power they have. They don't realize the agency that they have in the game. They don't realize that they can affect everything. But the stunts kind of like splay it out for you. Like, boom, boom, boom. You could do this. Like, really? I could, you know, make this character look like a fool in front of the media, or I could, you know, wipe out this entire Hydra. You know, like, they don't necessarily know. And these kind of just help guide you to better gameplay, better role play.
You're right. A lot of players, like, if I'm the Hulk Smash Barbarian and I have a big axe, then I'm pretty much going to Hulk Smash, or I'm going to intimidate people. Mm-hmm. But in this game, when you're in a social scene and you roll your points to intimidate and you start looking at your options, well, then you see one all of a sudden, like Jahan said, where you can make this guy look like a fool, or you can brag and make your next attack +2, like, you know, it's coming later. Or you can literally, in the Expanse, you can send out a viral video of the incident that's going on if you roll high enough.
This makes me think that what we're talking about here is player agency, like you said, at a point where you can be creative as the player, regardless of the character that you're playing.
And regardless of the scene that's going on, because the stunts change per scene also. So you don't even get stuck with, like, okay, I picked combat stunts as my guy, so all I'm going to do is combat. Everyone has access to all the stunts.
Yes, all stunts are available to everyone at any applicable time.
And the thing with some of the backgrounds and class features is that they'll make stunts cost less points. So instead of just getting access to things that only the shooty guy can do, everyone can shoot a gun, but the shooting gun guy gets to do it for 2 points less. So he might get to shoot his gun, you know, 3 or 4 times on his turn.
Yeah, it can change a lot. The stunt points are cool because they allow you to only do something like in an extreme moment kind of thing. Like, so we're playing Modern Age, and that has like magic and psychic abilities and stuff. One of our players used an empathy move on like a demon, right? And normally you can't like force it out of them. But he rolled some stunt points on the power table, and he actually got to depossess somebody because of stunts. Like,
that's cool.
Yeah, it changes the whole. Yeah. It changes everyone's toolbox.
That's really interesting because the stunt system, and then if you kind of compare that to like the corruption thing, or even the Dead Man Walking. Like, it seems like some of the most notable mechanics mentioned so far are these mechanics that like shift the narrative as it's going. Because like, I think, you know, running a D&D table, the game master presents a scene, the players respond to the scene, and then we go to the next scene, you know? And but this way, it's like you get presented a scene, you respond to the scene, and then the scene kind of starts to develop itself. And then everyone's following along. Like, oh, wait, this guy's dead now. We got to figure this out. Or, oh, wait, now the viral video has been spread out. Or, oh, wait, now I'm spawning a tentacle out of my arm. You know, we got to figure this out. And it just kind of changes the course a lot.
That's yeah, it's funny you phrase it that way, because that kind of touches on like one of my secrets as a game master. So after I don't know that I really tell people this a lot, but after 3, 4, sometimes 5 sessions, I really feel like I'm not doing that much anymore. You know what I mean? I just kind of arbitrate what the players are doing. I just let them do everything. Like, I let them evolve the scenes, create their enemies, create their problems. And I just sit there and watch and just, you know, it's like, oh, this is what happens when you do that. You know, I just react. I don't necessarily do the whole, like, this is my narrative. Like, it is a lot of improv. And I've been enjoying it.
That sandbox versus the railroad topic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do sandbox. My players like it more. I used to be a pretty bad railroader. But
there's a really easy way to hide the railroad, and it's just you let your players do whatever they want, and then the place that they get to has part of the quest that you wanted to have anyways.
I do sometimes.
Right.
If they don't want to
move the railroad, not the players.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Move the railroad, not the players. And then, you know, if they don't want to deal with certain NPCs or a certain quest matter, just reskin the same quest, you know, change your dungeon, update your monsters. It's not rocket science.
I was running a group of players in D&D. They were on this like magical island that was like more or less unexplored. I made this whole like shark creature. I forget what they're called, but they're like shark people. I made this whole shark people dungeon. I put a lot of work into it. I drew maps. I like had like everything listed out of what was where, and they just didn't go to it. And then so like later, they were trying to negotiate for like a magical item or something from a shopkeeper. And he was like, yes, but first you must do something for me. And like, he sent them to the dungeon. And it was really funny to me. Like, cause I don't think they had any idea of what happened, but, I did. And I was just happy I got to use my dungeon, you know?
Exactly. Because those of us who DM a lot or GM a lot have run into that hours or days of prep that goes nowhere because the players change course before or at the beginning of it.
And it's sometimes it's almost impossible to pace your players, because players will sit down and have a campfire conversation for an hour and a half, and then they won't move your plot at all. And then sometimes they'll sit down at the table and they'll want to go through like 3 or 4 cities in this session. And you're like, hey, man, that's not the way I wanted to move this plot. But they're like, yeah, we get on the boat, we pay the fare. Like, okay, I guess we're skipping this city.
I was just going to say, the last D&D campaign that I ran, I set it up so that it was first level up. And I set it up so that the players could have this encounter and they could start to build their experience and level up in this area and get the leads and move around in this area. But that's what the characters could do, but what did the players do? The players had the encounter, freaked out, left town, and went into a much more dangerous part of the...
Yep.
And did not ever get themselves off of that railroad track. Like, I couldn't get them off the railroad track. Aaron can speak to that.
Yeah, we just wholly abandoned it. We're like, yeah, we'll just leave and go adventure in this part of the world, which is not ready for us in any way.
So, yeah.
And you do have to move the goalposts a lot as a game master to make sure that, you know, you have a thing prepared and it's going to be fun. You're going to want your players to see it. I had an important dungeon in a forest that Gary and our friend Layton circumvented by taking a ferry. to your point earlier about the ferry. But luckily, the river did canonically go through that forest. So I had them attacked on the river, and then like their boat was a little damaged. They had to make harbor, and then boom, they, you know, got to a town and wound up getting a quest to go to the place I wanted them.
Perfect. Know? Yeah. Nice. So, Jahan, you're a forever GM. I was a forever GM for a long time. I'm starting to not consider myself that anymore. But Gary, do you GM, or are you strictly or mostly a player?
I am mostly a player. I GM'd for a few years, like 2 years maybe. I had to teach an entire other group of friends how to play. And then they started playing, and I played with them. And I started dealing with some really bad social anxiety and really bad mental health stuff. So I kind of stopped playing with them in person. And that's when Jahan and I reconnected that summer and started playing online. I had always sort of been standoffish to playing online. I think there's a lot of things about playing in person that are better. Like, if you want to talk with your hands or talk with your eyes or make a subtle joke, then you don't have to interrupt the entirety of what's going on. but I've grown to like the online format just because, like I said, that was when I had a really bad mental health breakdown and was going through a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder. And a lot of those symptoms were kicking my ass at the time. So I had to draw out of in-person games.
Yeah. Do either of you have a preference? Are you playing the preference that you have, or does it?
It's hard to say. I love playing. I do. I really enjoy it. But also, like, I find sometimes, like, I don't have enough to do when I'm a player necessarily. You know what I mean? Like, you got to let everyone kind of do the thing. I like that I can control a lot more as a game master. I like that I can shape the world in a different way. I like that I can, like, make an NPC here and there whenever I feel like it. But, man, I could definitely go for some more play.
I really like being a player, and I really like moving along the adventure or solving puzzles in unique ways. But the more and more I play, I've started to realize that I actually had this realization during Wild Sea like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Sometimes it's really cool if I take over the narrative for like, you know, a few minutes, and I just set up a scene and then get everyone there and sort of see what they do as a character. Or, let you know, to that same respect, what Jahan was saying earlier, you make your own villains and you can make your own allies. There's almost sort of this backseat thing you can do as a player where you can help set other people up for these situations. You can help set them up to make a villain so that they don't have to do it all themselves. You can help set them up to make a new friend. And I'm starting to have a lot of fun sort of teeing up these adventures now. I'm like playing a game within the game. It's a blast. I love playing. I'm not big on game mastering, but I always have ideas. I always jot things down, and I'm sure one day I'll put it all together. But it's I just haven't. I haven't done it. I don't love to do it.
I'd say, though, that kind of player is a game master's dream. And so, John, you must really enjoy having Gary there to
yeah, help. I like playing with Gary a lot. Yeah. It's nice to have somebody that actually wants to play your game, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
To get where it's going. Sorry, Aaron, did you want to say?
Well, I think I was going to say what you're about to say, which is to sort of kind of catch the vibe of what the table is, what the GM's trying to present. You know, when you can acknowledge that as a player, you bring a lot to the table, like from the player's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed when we played the other night, you know, to have players that are like ready to do something, even when you thought they just did something. That's cool because it means that we're still doing stuff.
Yeah. No, I definitely, yeah, I'm a forever GM, and I don't mind so much. I would like to play more, you know, if I'm being honest, but I don't mind running these 3 games a week.
I'm not even going to lie. When I GM, I usually play a character along with the party. I just don't use that party or that character to steer the narrative in any way. I'll put a bard or a healer or something with the group. That way they have some reason not to die, or they can have a sage that they can turn to whenever they don't have, you know, whenever they're trying to put something together and they can't put it together. I'll give them a sage that can help answer a question, but someone who's not at all useful in combat. And so, you know, it'll help them almost like a nav point type of character along the way. mm-hmm. who I get to play, I get to do a voice, I get to have fun. That guy gets to be in the bar and cut up with everybody else. But at the end of the day, he's not really the hero of the group. He's just kind of there. He's their fourth guy. He's the fourth musketeer, as it were. Yeah, exactly.
Nice. So you see all these materials, you see all these systems, you have all these experiences and things like that. Do you have plans to create any of your own stuff, or do you create any of your own stuff?
So we have started a couple projects. We haven't worked on them a little bit. Gary moved, and it's been, you know, I have a 9-to-5 now. So it's kind of been slowed, but we definitely both still have the interest in it. We know a lot about these games, and it'd be a shame to not at least try to make something. You know, I tinker with things in my free time sometimes. And I do want to release something at some point in the TTRPG space. I do like writing, and I would like to eventually maybe write like a book or something. It'd be cool.
Love it. Gary, you got any?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like Jahan said, we've actually been working on some things in the past, but it has been a few months since we've been able to put any more pen to paper. But we did. We sat down. We literally put pen to paper and started writing down ideas of what we wanted. And it helped the brainstorm process for sure to both be in the same room. But I right now, time is not our ally for this. But I think I know there will be a fresh out the box game at some point someday. And there will probably be two, because I know we'd want to make a superheroes game. And then I can't imagine that we wouldn't make a fantasy game. Uh-huh. And Jahan is such a big board games fan that if we made two games that worked out, well, we just might make a board game. And if we made three games that worked out, well, then we just might make a fourth one. So I can see that happening. And we just want to put the most effort and the most work into it and make sure we really get out a good product, I think.
Yeah, it definitely takes time and resources and stuff like that. But it's a fun process. It's exhausting sometimes, but it's a beautiful process, honestly.
Absolutely.
So aside from like creating your own stuff, how about the vision for Fresh Out the Box into the future? Is there, you just kind of planning to follow the same line, or you got other things you'd like to accomplish, or what's your thoughts on those?
I feel like I know some of this. So, I can't completely speak for Gary, but I mean, we do periodically, like when we like had 50 followers, we had a meeting and we're like, hey, what do we do now? And then we, you know, added a couple shows a week. We added a few, you know, we started reaching out to more people. We started messing with our format. We started the podcast. So, you know, we have these meetings periodically when we like plateau or whatever to discuss. So we kind of plan, I'd say probably about like 4 months in advance is like our vision thinking. But I don't have any intention of stopping doing this. Personally, I need table, like if I don't play tabletop role playing games, I will get depressed. Like it, I can't act. I've tried living without them. There was a period of time where I didn't have like the friends that played, didn't see anybody, and I was sad. So I'm not going to do that again. I might as well do it on stream. So I think that in 5 years we'll still be going strong, and hopefully have more than 300 followers by then.
I'm thinking that's probably going to be the case.
I also need a safe space to unleash my insanity. You know, not having a stage, it's nice to be able to be in my own house and to become someone completely different and, you know, just kind of let out these different emotions and these different stories and play through all these different adventures. I love it. There's always a new challenge for me. And we play with a different cast of people we try to play in a different cast with every single game and every single adventure so we can bring on new people, because I love people. I think people are, you know, everyone's full of stories. Everybody's different. I really am one of those people who thinks that human beings are magical little snowflakes, and I get shit for it all the time. But I believe it. I love people. People are great.
You know, I'm actually with you on that one. And I wanted to say as well that talked about just the kind of benefit that playing these games provides in terms of, you know, fulfilling different roles and characters and stuff. I know that I've used the role-playing game Tabletop to explore different archetypes and characters and, you know, even subconsciously. And it really does kind of provide an interesting medium for that.
I think it's one of the things about role-playing games that makes them so different, even from the crunchy, what did you call them, punishing board games?
Yeah.
with the role-playing stuff, we do get to say, like, who am I in this instance? How do I feel? And then we start just almost automatically reflecting on how we actually feel. You know, and going back to that concept of a character dying, when handled right, I think character death does so many things for a role-playing game because the stakes become so much more profound than they do losing your property in a dice property game or, you know, something like that, where it's you go up and you go down and you lose this property and you gain this one and you take this land over and then you lose this one and stuff like that, which are all fun strategy, you know, luck games.
Yeah.
But role-playing games are like, there's a piece of us in there and we can look at our character stable and go, you know, whether I want to admit it or not, I can see myself in every one of these characters.
Yes, that's exactly right. I've always said it, you know, in a tabletop, a good character, a really good deep character has got some part of you in it dialed up to 11 most of the time. And that's what sort of helps you connect with that character. And I totally agree. As I look at my backlog of characters and I see myself in every one of them, Ty.
Right.
Yeah. That concept of like a specific aspect being dialed up to 11. I definitely agree with that. I like that kind of concept a lot.
Yeah. I mean, tabletop role-playing games are very different from board games. And they allow you to really, I feel like they allow you to empathize, which is very important and a skill that most people, or at least a lot of people lack. More people could do with some empathy. And I think week in, week out, having to think the way other people think is good for you. And it's good for your soul. And it's good for your understanding of what other people might be going through.
And to back that up, there's, you know, that overlap with fiction, which, you know, role-playing games and fiction have a lot of overlap, obviously. The infamous committee of they, say that... that fiction readers are generally more empathetic and sympathetic people because they understand perspectives that they themselves have not lived yet. They still understand and can empathize with those situations. And role-playing games also give us that opportunity. So yeah, we are bettering ourselves, I think, as responsible role players in being open to that perspective and that experience.
Yeah, definitely.
Guys, we're about out of time. Where does everyone, where do they find you again?
I'm Jahananon. I'm at RockFact on Twitter. I am at Jahananon1 on TikTok, if you're into that kind of thing.
I'm CasualtyCDG, and you can find me at CasualtyCDG on the social media platforms. Of course, you can find both of us every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 8 p.m. until 11 p.m. Central Standard Time on twitch.tv/Jahananon. We also have a YouTube that's Fresh Out the Box and a Facebook Fresh Out the Box. And our podcast is Fresh Out the Podcast. That one's not so much tabletop games. That's movies, streaming shows, and any other pop culture stuff that we think is relevant for this week. And we get an episode of that every single Sunday. So we stay busy. There's lots of Jahan and Gary to be found.
Awesome. Really appreciate you coming over today to talk with us. Aaron, did you have any final thoughts as we wrap up?
No, I think I'm good.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. I look forward to continuing to follow along with what you're doing, and I imagine we'll see each other at the table here and there as well. Would love to do that with you from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely. We're hoping to have Aaron at our table as well.
That's what I hear. Yeah.
I know. I'm excited.
We're excited.
And thanks again. Yeah. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, that's just a shout out back to this community and how good it is at connecting people and, you know, just true lovers of games.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. We'll be talking to you and seeing you on the interwebs.
Bye. All right,
take it easy.